Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Monday, the 29th of April in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, what 60,000 headlines analysed by Bloomberg say about the Federal Reserve's next move.
The Japanese yen rebounds after dropping to a 34-year low against the dollar.
Plus, shaky foundations, why the UK's broken planning system is costing taxpayers more than ever.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
An analysis of more than 60,000 Federal Reserve News headlines shows that Jerome Powell's words in December hinting at a swifter pivot toward rate cuts gave markets a boost and likely helped the US economy dodge a downturn. Bloomberg Economics' Fed Sentiment Index, powered by a natural language processing algorithm, shows that while Powell's words led to a significant cut in borrowing costs, they also probably added about half a percentage point to inflation over the year. Despite the Fed chair being forced into a reversal of some of his comments this month, Bloomberg's analysis shows that Powell has only undone a fraction of the stimulus unleashed by his December press conference.
Well, the research comes ahead of Wednesday's Fed decision, where investors will once again be scrutinising the chair's comments for clues about how long the central bank keeps rates high. Here's what Goldman's chief Asia economist, Andrew Tilton, is expecting.
He needs to keep the options open for the Fed after a set of upside surprises to inflation in the first quarter. We don't know for sure whether we'll see inflation down to target in time for the Fed to begin cutting by mid-year. Our forecast, we think the Fed starts cutting in July. We think we'll see a lower run rate of inflation in Q2 and beyond, but that's still a forecast, not a fact.
Andrew Tilton's outlook comes as markets suggest that Fed policymakers have shifted the debate from how many times the central bank will cut rates to whether to ease at all this year. Swaps traders now see only one reduction for 2024. Despite increased pessimism, though, on easing, early results from the current reporting season suggests 81% of US companies are outperforming expectations, even against the backdrop of elevated rates.
There have been major swings in the value of the yen in trading today. The Japanese currency weakening past 160 to the dollar for the first time since 1990 before strongly rebounding. Traders are on high alert for signs of intervention from Japanese authorities. Our Markets Live Asia lead Garfield Reynolds says they don't have a lot of options considering the wide gulf in interest rates with the United States.
Yes, the BOJ is on a tightening path, but it's a slow path. That makes it hard for the Ministry of Finance to come in strongly to drive the dollar yen down, especially when everything else is busy driving the dollar up against everything.
That's Bloomberg's Garfield Reynolds there. Last week, the Bank of Japan indicated financial conditions will remain easy, though policymakers have repeatedly warned that depreciation won't be tolerated if it goes too far too fast.
Now to politics. Scotland's First Minister Hamza Youssef may step down, according to UK media reports. The Sunday Times says he's preparing to resign today, but the BBC say that the SNP leader has not yet made a final decision on his position. The speculation comes as Hamza Youssef prepares to face two no-confidence votes this week. Former Chief of Staff to Nicola Sturgeon, Liz Lloyd, told Bloomberg even surviving the votes would bring further uncertainty.
For Youssef, if he survives, the government is fundamentally unstable. I mean, he cannot govern essentially in hoc to Alex Salmond's ALBA party. There will be people on his own benches who will not be happy with that. So he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Liz Lloyd speaking there on Bloomberg's UK politics podcast. Youssef had been trying to rebuild the SNP's image after a year of turmoil in the wake of the departure of longtime leader Nicola Sturgeon.
Reinhold Geiger already owns more than 70% of L'Occitane. Now the skincare chairman reportedly is considering an offer for the shares he doesn't already own through an investment vehicle. Bloomberg's Tiwa Adebayo has the details.
The billionaire chairman of skincare brand L'Occitane has his sights set on taking the company private. Sources say that an offer could soon be made valuing the firm at around $7 billion. Blackstone and Goldman Sachs are poised to fund the buyout, providing a total of $1.6 billion, Bloomberg has learned. This is the second time this month that Geiger has reportedly come close to a deal to take L'Occitane private. In London, Tiwa Adebayo, Bloomberg Radio.
The United States is stepping up the push for both a Gaza ceasefire and for the release of hostages. Israel's foreign minister says that if there is a hostage deal, they will suspend a planned invasion of the Gazan city of Rafah. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has more.
This comes with Secretary of State Antony Blinken visiting Israel today and meeting with Israeli officials. The White House says Israel has now agreed to hear concerns. NSC spokesman John Kirby says 6 weeks.
If we can get that in place, then that gives you 6 weeks of peace. It gives you no fighting for 6 weeks, and that includes no fighting in Rafah. And what we're hoping is that after 6 weeks of a temporary ceasefire, we can maybe get something more enduring in place.
Kirby says Israel has agreed that there will be no attack on Rafah until the U.S. concerns are heard. He says we'll see where that goes. Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Radio.
Meanwhile, the U.S. diplomatic effort comes as the New York Times reports that Israel believes the International Criminal Court is preparing to issue arrest warrants. The warrants would be for senior Israeli government officials on charges related to the conflict with Hamas, according to five Israeli and foreign officials.
Bloomberg has learned that Tesla will partner with Baidu to bring its assisted driving feature to China after CEO Elon Musk made a surprise visit to the country. The move may generate some much-needed revenue for the electric car maker as it faces stiff competition from rivals like XPeng, Xiaomi and Huawei. Musk spoke only very briefly to reporters on the visit to praise China's EV firms.
It's good to see electric vehicles making progress in China. All cars will be electric in the future.
Elon Musk's trip comes days after Tesla announced it had suffered its first year-on-year decline in quarterly revenue since 2020. The EV maker says it's cutting headcount by at least 10% and looking to accelerate new models as it looks to get back to growth. And we're going to get more on those moves in the yen in a moment, as well as look ahead to this week's Federal Reserve meeting, plus a story on how UK taxpayers are picking up the bill for failings in the country's planning laws. But another story that caught our eye this morning. Last year, we were worried about heatflation driving up food prices, high temperatures making it more difficult for crop growers. This year, the operative word is sogflation.
Yes, I totally get that because I spent most of the weekend trudging around in the rain. And although there are predictions actually of another very hot summer in Europe this summer, including in the UK, we just had an unbelievable amount of rain. And that is also having an effect on prices.
Yeah, this means that particular for crop growers, think about potato growers, for example, poor weather conditions last autumn meant that harvesting had to stop after just 3 weeks. So that meant that farmers couldn't get crops out of the ground. The estimate from one industry group is that 650,000 metric tons of potatoes didn't make it to market. They're now warning about a 20% decrease in seed availability for this year. Potato prices have shot through the roof, up 81% year on year. There could be further increases to come. Our opinion columnist Lara Williams has been writing about this, her piece on the Terminal on sogflation, well worth a read this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. How Europe has seen one of the wettest periods on record for many, many places. So an interesting read this morning.
Let's get more now on some of those moves that we've seen in the Japanese yen this morning. We saw the currency at one point weaken past 160 to the dollar, so a fresh 34-year low, now bouncing back up 1.8% on the day to just over 155 at this point, the dollar. So traders have been on alert for intervention from the finance ministry. Mary Nicola from Bloomberg's Markets Live team joins us now for more. Mary, great to have you on the programme. How do you characterise the moves that we've seen in the Japanese yen today?
Oh, it's been an interesting morning, to say the least, because we thought that it would be quiet, especially with Japan out for a holiday today. However, that's not what we've seen. We've seen it go to 160 and then bounce back now towards around 155. So obviously there's thin trading, so very small moves can make a difference, whether people are profit taking or whether, you know, people are just decide or there could be intervention as well. So it's hard to tell, especially with liquidity so thin, what's really driving these moves.
Okay, so on intervention watch then in Japan, despite the holiday. Mary, we're also looking ahead towards Wednesday's Fed decision and how much Friday's sticky PCE reading will actually influence policymakers' thinking.
Yeah, there's no question that there's rising expectation and there will be much more hawkish rhetoric from the Fed. And they're going to have to emphasize that need to stay patient when it comes to cutting interest rates. Because the fact is, the environment, whether we're looking at the labor market or inflation, their dual mandate, it doesn't justify rate cuts just yet. So I think a lot of that messaging is going to be hammered in from the Fed, and we're going to see that come through. And that actually makes things a little bit difficult for the Ministry of Finance in Japan, who, if we continue to see two-year yields drift higher, a lot of the, if they consider intervention, it might prove to be ineffective.
This, as Mary, we've been reporting on this latest story from Bloomberg Economics, Fed Sentiment Index as well, looking at the impact that Jerome Powell's December pivot has had on markets and on the economy. How does this analysis help us to understand both the dilemma the Fed is in now, but also the power that that particular press conference had?
Yeah, I mean, you come in December and I was the same. I was convinced that we're going to get Fed cuts, and seven cuts looked actually, and the market was pricing in about seven cuts, and that almost looked realistic and plausible after the Fed meeting, especially because we were seeing PCE trending lower. So a lot of the stars were aligned, so to speak, for the Fed to start cutting. And then, of course, that's shifted when you have three months of data showing that inflation is moving in the opposite direction, showing that inflation remains sticky. It's hard for the Fed to renege on and go against anything that they've go against the inflation and say that they're going to start cutting. So so now we've moved from pricing in about seven to pricing in about one, and now it's going to be, does it get pushed out even further, or do they even consider that maybe financial conditions are too easy and they might have to hike again?
Yeah, it's certainly, again, another important moment, isn't it? The Fed decision on Wednesday, of
Absolutely.
Course. Mary Nicola, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
From Bloomberg's Markets Live team.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Now, an exclusive report from Bloomberg has revealed that British taxpayers are paying the most on record to cover the costs of developers successfully appealing planning applications that were previously rejected by local councils. It's highlighted yet another consequence of the country's broken planning system, which is causing massive delays in home building and worsening a housing shortage that's become a key election talking point, with the story from Bloomberg's residential real estate reporter Damien Shepherd joins us now for more. Damien, good morning. What is it about the planning process then that's becoming such a burden to taxpayers?
Yeah, so the UK planning process is a very democratic system in that local residents are invited to share their views with the council when an applicant puts in a decision to build homes. Now, this is great from the point of view that a resident can make decisions on how their local area looks, but the drawback is that it can lead to a prevalent amount of NIMBYism and the blocking of house building in an area. Now, what we're seeing a record amount of is planning applications being rejected at the first stage. So residents are being invited to share their views. Them and the councils are deciding, we don't want to see this down our road. And they're then going on to be approved by an independent body, the Planning Inspectorate, which is fully funded by the taxpayer. So this exclusive report is revealing a real cost to the taxpayer for applications that on paper should have been approved in the first place, but were blocked by NIMBYism.
Okay, so then how do the delays affect people's ability then to buy homes, the kind of follow-through issues?
Yeah, so, I mean, the drawback is that we're seeing a lack of supply. You know, we've spoken a lot about the lack of housing in the UK. And if we're seeing these bottlenecks happening in houses being built, then it's just delaying the amount of stock that's coming through to the market and propping up house prices at a time when people are really struggling to pull together enough money to even go and do their food shop. So that's why less people are getting on the housing ladder. more people are stuck in the rental market, and ultimately less homes are being built. And we're going to see this be more and more of a big topic of conversation as the election nears.
Is this just about residents saying they don't want developments built closer to them? Are there deeper problems reflected in this reporting as well, Damien?
Yeah, it's definitely not the only issue. I think even if you take NIMBYism away from the planning system, this is the third in a series of planning exclusives we've done, which have revealed a massive lack of staff in these planning departments, a huge lack of funding coming to them. So we're seeing 80% of major applications not being decided in time anyway by a local authority. So there's a lot of things here which are impacting the delivery of planning. And the ultimate consequence is that there's tens and thousands of houses stuck in the planning system which aren't coming out of the ground, and more people speaking down the pub about how they can't afford a home.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.